Okay, so by special request, you have a sheet?
We'll share.
By special request, we're going to start with a little discussion of Rav Melamed's explanation for why specifically the reason for the Minhagei Avilut, based on his understanding of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so let's read it. Okay, around that page says Hatam Taam Minhagei Avilut. So he says, Hayamim shebein Chag HaPesach leChag HaShavuot, Hem Yamim sheyesh bahem tzar, they're days of suffering, of pain. Ho'il u'metu bahem esrim v'arba, elef tamidei Rabbi Akiva. Since 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died during this time. Lefichach nohagim b'yamim elu miktzat minhagei Avilut. Therefore, there are a few forms of mourning which we practice during this time. Shelo laset isha, not to get married, shelo listaper, v'chein ein orchim bahem rikudim u'mecholo shel reshut. And we don't have dancing and things like that that are not for a specific mitzvah. We should elaborate a little bit on the central idea. The reason for the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara in Masechet Yevamot says the following. Amru, they said, Shneim asar elef zugim shel talmidim. There are 12,000 pairs of students, right? 12,000 pairs of students that Rabbi Akiva had. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. Okay?
12,000 pairs? A pair of 12,000 each?
No, 12,000 pairs of students. I mean, 24,000. I mean, 12,000 times 2. Right?
Stolen piece.
Okay. Okay, so he says, V'chulan meitu v'perek echad. And they all died during one time period, because they didn't give a proper amount of respect to each other. That's why I always assumed, that's why it says 12,000 pairs, because the chisaron, their lacking, was within their pairs, meaning within how they interacted with each other. So it doesn't say 24,000 students, it says 12,000 pairs, because the pairs were problematic within each other. They didn't treat each other respectfully. The Talmidei Chachamim didn't treat each other respectfully. Okay? So Tana, kula metu in Pesach v'Atzeret. So there's a braita that says they all died between Pesach and Shavuot. Kula metu b'mitah ra'ah, and they all died a very horrible death. V'aya olam shamem, ashuva Rabbi Akiva etzel rabbatino shebedarom ve'ushana lahem. So the world was empty until Rabbi Akiva came to our rabbis who were in the south, and he taught them. Meaning these are the five new students, the five new students that Rabbi Akiva used to restart the Torah tradition. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, v'hem hem hamidu Torah. Okay, so after the 24,000 students died, Rabbi Akiva didn't give up hope. He didn't become despondent. He didn't become depressed. Maybe he was upset, but he didn't stop teaching students. Rather, he found new students, and that's what one of the explanations that I believe the Pri Chadash asks the famous question. Why are we so happy on Lag BaOmer? What's the big simcha of Lag BaOmer? 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died. Do you know why they stopped dying on that day? Because there are no more. Right? Rabbi Chadash says, there are no more students. All 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died. So what's the big simcha of Lag BaOmer? We have parties, and we have hilulas, and we dance, and we sing, whatever.
Do we know exactly how they died?
The Gemara says 12,000 pairs of students. That's what the Gemara says. Oh, how they died. Oh, that's what we're going to discuss. That's what we're going to discuss. Okay.
I'm always upset.
So 12,000. What are we so happy about? So the Pri Chadash says that the simcha is the fact that Rabbi Akiva didn't give up hope; rather, he went and he established new students, and from those five students was the basis for all the Torah that was spread afterwards, and the Torah that we have till today. It's because of those five students of Rabbi Akiva who he was able to teach, and they continued the tradition of the Torah. Okay, so. Old Mr. Barba Midrash, Amar Rabbi Akiva Tamidav Chadashim, Banai Harishim Lometu El Shaitai named Tsara Elu Vailu. So why the first ones die? Because their eyes, literally their eyes were narrow, meaning they were a little bit stingy with each other. Tnu Dachem Shalo Ta'asu Kimazim. Be careful so you don't do the way they did. Okay? Make sure that you don't fall into the same trap that my original 24,000 students fell into. Okay, so let's just do the rest of the page quickly, and then we'll do the footnote, because the footnote's the main event, okay? So he says, "Mini az yamim elu shal sfirat ha'omer, hem yamim shenogim behem iksat min ha'gei ha'bilut." So from that time, so they became days of mourning, a little bit of mourning. So we try to specifically emphasize and work on our relationships interpersonally, right? We work on our character traits and our interpersonal relationships. Specifically, in particular, between those who study Torah, like all the people in this room or people who study Torah, specifically the Talmidim who are studying Torah, they have to be particularly careful to improve their relationships with each other, their understanding for each other, and their respect for each other. Okay, so now let's apply this a little more. Since it's it wasn't a takana of Chachamim, it's just a custom. Okay, so we know there are different customs as to how we calculate these times between Pesach and Atzeret, what we do, what we don't do, different customs. Okay, you want to share them with or you say okay, I'll share over there. Okay, I'll take it, Josh. Okay. So then he just points out something very interesting historically, that about 1,000 years later, I want to read it inside, in the last paragraph, about 1,000 years later, so in Europe, the Crusades, the very famous Crusades, in which thousands, if not more, of Jews in the Ashkenazic lands were killed, the Crusades took place specifically in the time of Sfirat HaOmer. And therefore, there were some extra things that they became more serious, they became accepted more seriously after the Crusades took place during this time. The Crusaders waited for the spring until they couldn't go in the winter because the roads were all muddy and the roads were all, and it was slushy and they couldn't really travel so well. So they waited for the spring until everything was dry and everything was put back together. And that's when they chose to go out and Rahmana Litzlan, go on their Crusades, and they killed many, many Jews along the way. And then 500 years later, the very famous Chmelnytskyi massacres took place about 500 years later. Also, they're called Gzerot Tach V'Tat, specifically in this time of the year as well. So many, many difficult things happened to the Jewish people in this time of the year. Actually, there's a tefillah that the Ashkenazim say before Musaf called Av HaRachamim. I'm not sure anybody's heard of it, but it's a tefillah to Hashem that they specifically don't say on days that we don't say tachanun, they don't say avarachamim, and also any Shabbat mevarchim, any Shabbat that they announce Rosh Chodesh, they also don't say this tefillah of avarachamim. What's interesting is that during Sfirat HaOmer, even if it's Shabbat mevarchim, they still say avarachamim, because this is such a difficult time for the Jewish people, even though they don't normally say this tefillah, but since it's such a difficult time, and the Crusades took place, and so many Jews were killed during this time, they still say the tefillah of Av HaRachamim. Yeah?
So just to clarify, the 24,000, they all died in one 33-day period?
Okay. Unclear. I think somebody, I was in this class or another class, somebody told me that it happened over the course of many years, during this 33-day period. It could be, or it could be that it happened in 1 year. It probably will depend on which explanation you adopt for how they died.
Why does it repress up to Atzeret if it stopped on the 33rd?
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, it's not so clear that it happened on the 33rd. I mean, there are those that say that it happened on 33 days between Pesach and Atzeret. So if you exclude like the rest of Chodesh Nisan and Rosh Chodesh and Lag BaOmer, you end up with 33 days also that the students, and maybe also like the few of the days before.
So why do we celebrate Lag BaOmer?
So our custom is, there is another source in Chazal, he doesn't quote it here, that does imply that it wasn't the entire 49-day period. It sort of cuts it in half somewhere. So then we come out somehow to 33 days. So then we have the first 33, some Ashkenazim have the second 33, starting from Rosh Chodesh until the 3 days before Shavuot. Some people have, I told you, like those like scattered 33 days. Right. There are different ways to calculate the 33 days. Okay. Anyway, the last line, he says, "Lefichach natu b'Ashkenaz lachmir yoter minhagei avilut elo." That in Ashkenaz, and Ashkenazic lands, they tend to be more strict on these minhagei avilut, because during this time of the year, they suffered specifically the Crusades and the Chmelnytsky massacres. Certain things happened to the Jewish people specifically during this time. Okay, let's get to the note. Okay, that's what we're here for. Okay, that's why we brought down this ma'amar, because our topic for today is something different. Okay? So let's see the footnote here. B'gemara katuv. So what was the death, as Daniel asked very astutely? What was the death? So b'gemara katuv, shamita kasha shemetu ba hi askara. It was some sort of physical illness, maybe some sort of has to do with like a very, very heavy fever, a very, very high fever. I think it's some sort of illness
it's
that
like
they died from.
Kind of death, huh?
Yeah, it's a very, very painful and very, very difficult death. Correct, correct. And that's what the Gemara said. The Gemara said mita ra'a, right? So it fits with the language of the Gemara that it was mita ra'a. So the Gemara says that it was askara. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's how they interpret the Gemara. Maybe the Gemara separately says it was askara. I'm not sure. Uvi geret Rav Shira Gaon katav shemetu bigzirat shemad. They died in a time of religious oppression. If somehow through the time of religious oppression, presumably they were killed by the enemies of the Jewish people at a time of religious oppression. So it wasn't an illness, but it was murder through the hands of other people. Okay, now he's going to say a very interesting sort of elaboration on this idea. Kemshech lazeh shemati pirush me'anyen. By the way, in the Otsar HaGeonim, I don't know if we have it here, but in the Otsar HaGeonim, on that Gemara, Masechet Yevamot, it brings this opinion also, that they died. It either says Gzirat HaShemat, or it says something more explicitly, like what Rav Melamed is about to say. When Rabbi Chaim came to YU for Shabbat 2 years ago, he mentioned this on Friday night. He spoke about this on Friday night from the Otsar HaGeonim. Okay? So anyways, so he said a very interesting interpretation. Shemetu ba'et mered bar kochba. We know that about, I think approximately 60 years, approximately, after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, so there were still Jews living in the land of Israel. The land wasn't empty. And a Jewish leader by the name of Bar Kokhba led a revolution in order to try to sort of rid themselves of the Roman rule, which had come after the, bless you, had come after the destruction of Second Beit HaMikdash. So, and we know that one of Bar Kokhba's greatest supporters was Rabbi Akiva. Basically, some people thought maybe this is the end of the second Galut, just like the first Galut was only 70 years. Maybe the second Galut also won't be that long, and we'll be able to overcome the Roman rule, be able to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And Rabbi Akiva was one of the biggest supporters of Bar Kokhba. Anyways, so this interpretation says that the students of Rabbi Akiva died in the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. Okay? V'hayu ben tamidav ke'edu shiyatsu lehilachem b'romayim. So some of his students, they actually went out to physically fight against the Romans, some of Rabbi Akiva's students. V'hayu shimshichu b'talmudam. But there are also those who decide to stay in the Beit HaMidrash and to continue learning. V'achayalim et tamidei yeshiva hayu mivazim elu et elu. He says the soldiers and the students who stayed in the yeshiva, they would make fun of each other. They would be disrespectful to each other. They say, what do you think you're doing? I'm better than my friends. The guys who were in the yeshiva would say, listen, those guys, they're not talmidei chachamim, they're not religious, they go out to the army, they should stay in yeshiva and learn. And the chayalim said, look at those people in yeshiva, they don't take part in the war effort, they don't contribute anything to the war, they're sitting and learning Torah, and they think that's all they have to do. Shema she'ani yoseh chashuv mo'il. Each one said that what I'm doing, that's what's important. That's what helps. What my friend is doing, that doesn't help at all. And they all died during this time period because of the sinat chinam, right? The Gemara says that they didn't give honor one to the other. They didn't give respect one to the other. So what was that issue? What was the lack of respect? So Rav Melamed suggests that the lack of respect was a lack of respect in each one's way of serving Hashem. Each group of the students of Rabbi Akiva had their own way they decided to serve Hashem, and they didn't respect the decisions that the other ones made.
The example you're giving is also a very modern issue.
Yes, 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 yes. It's a very modern issue, exactly. And that's why Rav Melamed is bringing it. It's 1,000% a very modern issue, right?
The soldiers in the army and then the...
Right, exactly. So he says that everybody has to respect each other, right? They're different derachim serving Hashem. They're different ways. We need people studying yeshiva. We need people in the army. We need people doing both. And each one has to respect the decisions that the other one makes. I love this point. He says, the date is not by accident. It's not by chance. Huben Chag HaPesach HaMevateh HaLumiut Shel Yisrael HaYisraelit Leben Chag HaShavuot HaMevateh HaTorah HaRuchanit. Right? So he says that the two bookends of Sfirat HaOmer, Pesach and Shavuot, each one is an expression of a different, very, very important facet of what it means to be part of the Jewish people. A very important piece of what it means. Pesach is the nationality. It's our nation. We're a country. We're an Am. We came out together. And part of that also means we have an army. We defend ourselves. We want independence. We want to have our own state. We want to have our own land, right? Very appropriate for Yom HaAtzmaut also coming up this week. But there's also the Ruach Niyut. Shavuot represents the spirituality. Shavuot is Kabbalat HaTorah. We can't have one without the other. We can't have an Am without the Torah. We can't have the Torah without an Am. We can't be a nation without the Torah. We can't have a Torah without a nation. We need both together. So the time of Sefirat HaOmer is that bridge between the nationality, the nationhood, and the religious, the spirituality of the Jewish people. And therefore, specifically at this time, we recognize and we note this struggle, this balance, and the necessity to respect the perspectives of each other, specifically during this time. V'otam tamidim shelo kibdu zeh zeh, and the students who didn't respect each other, hifridu v'chilku ben chag ha-pesach l'chag ha-shavuot. That's when they separated. That's when they went their different ways. Bin halumiyut la-torah. V'alkin kulam mitu b'tkufa azur. And that's why they all died during this time period. Okay? V'yesh gorsim b'gespereshit rabba, shaita enehem tzara batora elu ba'elu. Not haya enehem tzara. Not that their eyes were stingy with each other's, but their eyes were stingy in the Torah. What does that mean? Ulfize ikara tikun tzarech liyot mechuvan kidei laharbot v'chavot ben lomdei haTorah mehafugim hashonim. So he says that what it means that they're tzarot batorah means they didn't respect each other's approach to the Torah. And therefore, specifically at this time, we have to be extra careful. With the extra thing we have to work on is the way that the different Lomdei Torah, the way that the different people who study Torah relate to each other in this time. Okay? That's what he says. Okay? So that's sort of Melamed's beautiful explanation for why, how did the students die, and how it connects specifically to this time of the year.
So now what's the answer to the question why there's many times in history that people die?
Yes.
Right, so now people come and ask, why for this one we have some, you know, Hakim of Avelud, and we do certain things, but in the other times we don't do anything.
Right, it's a good question.
In the Holocaust, they died, what do? We don't, okay, now they have whatever, Yom HaShoah, okay, one day.
Right.
You know, why, what's so significant about this?
Okay, so there are a couple of things. First of all, Rabbi Akiva was probably the main teacher of, it seems to be he was the main teacher of Torah at that time. So therefore, there was a huge amount of loss to the Jewish tradition in the death of the 24,000 students. I mean, we have 5 students of Rabbi Akiva, and so much of the Torah that we have, so much knowledge and wisdom comes from those 5 students. But imagine what the 24,000 students were and how much we lost in that time as well. That's part of it. It's an interesting question why we never, but I mean, aside from the Holocaust, which is an obvious contrast, an obvious sort of supplement to this, there weren't really, I don't know if there were that many other situations where so many people, especially so many people who were so connected to the Mesorah of Torah, all died at one point in time. So that probably has a lot to do with why the mourning took place specifically in this time.
Rabbi Chaim told me last night, I was asking him some questions, he told me last night, he's like, it's not, the main reason why we're doing it is not for the mourning. Like, we're not in mourning. Because I asked, it's controversial. Like, I don't know, whatever. I asked if let's say your dad comes and tells you to shave, what should he do?
So what he said.
You know? So he said, your dad's a tzaddik, he doesn't want you to shave, don't shave. That's how he answered me.
He wants you to shave, so
no,
shave.
No.
He said, your dad does not want you to shave.
Your dad's a tzaddik, so don't worry. He's not gonna bother you.
Okay.
I said, okay, what about somebody else? He does, he didn't give me an answer. Whatever. Okay. That aside, then he said, so I said, okay, so what's the whole point? He said the point isn't to shave or not to shave. Shulchan Aruch says don't do it, so try not to do it. Fine. Yeah. But he said the main point is we're doing these things as simani to remind us that what happens if we don't keep the Torah. What happens if we make these mistakes
of not being no kavod,
not having kavod between each other? This is exactly it. It's a sign. Why? I see everybody now doesn't shave. I see everybody is doing these things. Why? It's a sign. This is a sign we should remember. You have to act with kavod with each other. That's nice. What one of the point what the this time of year around is very, for that. It's good. A sign to remember and realize, okay, this, you know, this is what happened, that they didn't act with kavod to each other, they were such great people, and still they all died, that, you know, remember and act with kavod to one another.
Very nice. Thank you. Very good. I mean, I think even if you say it's avilut, it's still not a contradiction, meaning the avilut is there to remind, to make you think of something.
Okay, so then my dad always tells me, okay, you're making it equal between what you're doing now for this and what you do after a parent passed away. For the same thing, you're leaving your beard for 30 days.
Right.
So we always have back and forth. So he told me, go ask Rabbi Chaim. So I asked Rabbi Chaim, Rabbi Chaim told me that.
Very good. So there's a very important lesson to be learned. We have to focus not just on the fact that they died, but what we have to learn from the fact that they died. The lesson that we learn, that we have to really make sure that we increase our kavod zebaza, and we increase our respect towards each other. Very good. Thank you very much. So we have to be careful when we see other people who are serving Torah in ways that are different than the way we serve Torah, follow the Torah in different ways, keep the Torah in different ways, that we're respectful for everybody who keeps the Torah in their own independent way. Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to
accepting Reform Jews and all.
No, but they're not keeping. They're not following the Torah. They're doing their own thing. We have a tradition as to how the Torah is. You know, that there's certain parameters. We have boundaries, and they went past the boundaries. So unfortunately, they're outside.
A lot of the people who are considered Orthodox would say that the other Orthodox Jews are not.
I was thinking about that too. Good. Very good.
You're getting a little.
It's a fair question. No, you're saying that's why people aren't
the parameters.
Right. What are the parameters, right? Okay. Good. It's a good question. I think it's safe to say the Reform's not in the parameters. Who else?
See, we're not
in Okay. Very good. They would say such a thing, but that has to be determined. Okay, fine, very good. So let's turn to the other page that starts with Aleph. Thank you for coming, Josh. So let's turn to the other page that starts with Aleph. We want to start a discussion today of the laws of Muktzah. I suggested another topic. We didn't have overwhelming support of it. So we're going to start with the laws of Muktzah today, Bezer Hashem. Okay? So,
Muktzah. What
the
bottom?
It's a different page. It's the other piece of paper on the side that starts with Aleph on the top.
Yep.
Okay, you got that? Okay, so he says, Asru Chachamim. Okay, so Muktzah is a very important, it's a very detailed aspect of Hilchot Shabbat, and it's an extremely common aspect of Hilchot Shabbat. It comes up all the time in many, many circumstances, and there are different rules about what you're allowed to move, what you're not allowed to move, how you're allowed to move it, when you're allowed to move it. So therefore, I think Pinina Halacha is really the best sefer for us to use, because he's very thorough, and he's very clear, and he's very organized in his discussion of this topic. Okay, so Yisod HaYisur. So, what's the basis? Where does this prohibition of Muktzeh come from? Asur Chachamim leTatal Dvarim Sheinam Ruiyim leShabbat VaAdam Maktzeh Otam MiDa'ato. So, the Chachamim forbade a person to move things that are not fitting for Shabbat; they're not appropriate for Shabbat, and a person separates himself from these things. His mind is separated from these things. Shnei ta'amim yisodiim le'isur. There are two basic reasons, basic ideas behind this prohibition. Aleph, lishmor al tzivyon ha-shabbat kiyom kidusha ha-mnucha. To maintain, retain the character of the day of Shabbat as a day of sanctity and rest. Uvichlal zeh, shegam hayadayim yishpetu, mitiltul, the hands should also rest from moving things around. Vehitaskut bidvarim sheinam kshurim leShabbat. Right, that in order to sort of maintain the sanctity of the day, the specialness of the day, so it's important that not just we don't do malacha, but also even our hands should refrain from being involved in things that are not connected to Shabbat. And bet lasot siyag shelo yavo adam lasot malacha b'Shabbat. And also as a sort of a boundary, so that we don't come to do melacha on Shabbat. Let's begin by explaining the first reason. In addition to the melachot that are forbidden on Shabbat, the Torah also forbade us to, commanded us to rest, right? Not just that I'm not allowed to do creative acts, I'm not allowed to make things, I'm not allowed to build things, I'm not allowed to make fires, I'm not allowed to cook, and I'm not allowed to do all those things. I'm also, there's a separate mitzvah to rest on this day, to separate myself from certain activities and to be resting. So what are the pasuk? Uvayom ha-shvi'i tishbot. On the seventh day, stop. Stop all your business, all your actions, everything you're involved in. L'man yanuach shorcha v'chamorecha b'nefesh b'namatecha v'ger. So that your animals will rest, and that your slaves will rest, and the foreigner will rest. V'chei ne'amar sheshem yaseku melacha uvayom ha-shvi'i Shabbat Shabbaton. Kodesh la'ashem. Not just that you don't do melacha, but it's Shabbat Shabbaton. It's a special day. Kodesh la'asem is la'ashem, set aside for Hashem. So how do we do that? How do we make it into a special day? How do we make it into the day of Shabbaton? So it says, K'day l'kayim et mitzvot ha-Torah l'shvot v'anuach b'Shabbat. In order to fulfill these mitzvot, tiknu chachamim kama takanot shenoadu l'shmor al tzivyon ha-Shabbat k'yom k'dushah v'nuchah. So the chachamim, in order to maintain this status of a special day Shabbat, the chachamim made certain takanot that you should do. U'v'chalan shelo l'tatel mukseh. Part of it is not to move mukseh. Listen, if I can move around all the things that I don't need, I move around my iPod and I move my iPhone and my CDs and my discs and my calculator and my hammer and my nails and my pens and everything. They'll all be busy. They'll be cleaning up their house. You know, I'll use Shabbat to organize my desk and to organize my house and everything that's going on. I'll go to the bank. And I'll sort of sort things out with the bank, and I'll go to my safety deposit box, and I'll organize things in there. You won't be at rest. You'll miss a whole. You'll be 7 days a week. You'll be busy. You won't have that one day of stopping from everything that you're doing. And more than just what it says in the Torah, the Nevi'im also commanded about the status of Shabbat, the character of Shabbat. Shehilucha Shabbat shoneh mishalchol, right? They would say, "Im tashiv mishabbat raglacha asor chavetzacha biyom koshi." The karada Shabbat oneg, right? So you have to your walking has to be different on Shabbat. That's why unless you're running for a mitzvah, we don't run on Shabbat. V'sichat haShabbat shoneh mishalchol. The things you talk about, right? You don't talk about, you know, the business deal you want to do tomorrow, and you don't talk about other types of melacha. No, that's not appropriate. Our speech on Shabbat is separate also. As an extension of this, they said that the way your hands deal with things should not be the way that it is on Chol. So he says, the basis of the concept of mukseh comes from the Torah, but the specific applications come from the words of the Chachamim.
All right, in my yeshiva, we had like this light in my room, and I would move it on Shabbat, like so it wouldn't get in my face.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to?
So we'll learn about that. Yeah, that's probably called klisha melachto liyisur, and it's probably considered sorech. Probably mikomo, right? It's igufo mikomo. It's probably mikomo, but we'll get to that. Bezrat Hashem, that there are certain types of mukseh that I'm allowed to move under certain circumstances, right? Certain types of mukseh I cannot move normally under any circumstances, but certain types of mukseh I'm allowed to move under certain circumstances. Your lamp is probably a good example. Okay. Hatam Hasheni. What's the other reason? Kmo bechol mitzvot haTorah asur chachamim siyak kedi larchik et adam mehavira. So they made a fence in order to separate a person from avira. Bisur mukzeh, like this is, we just read in Pirkei Avot this past week, right? The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, right? Hem Amru Shlosha Dvarim, what were the three things?
So Sig LaTorah.
Right, that's the Torah. Heve Mutunim Badin. You should make sure you spend a good amount of time in doing your judgment. And Hamut, I think, Hamut Hamid Chachem is the second one. Asu Siyag LaTorah is the third one. The most famous Siyag LaTorah is mukzeh. Okay. First of all, if I start moving these things around, I may come to move them outside. And secondly, I don't come to in order to do not to come to do other melachot. Okay, so and he says melacha mukzeh creates sort of your thought and your hands are on the same page. Kol davar shelifi hakarato shel haadam in order to shmush Shabbat, ma'idan lo yishmush Shabbat. Anything that you recognize is not appropriate for Shabbat, your hands won't be involved in it either. Okay, now, interesting in the note here, he says, Kata Baruch HaShulchan, Shekfar Mimot Moshe Rabbeinu Nagur B'Yisur Muksav. Very interesting. He says that even at the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Yisur Muksav, it's Derabanan, but it's a very, very old Takana Derabanan, all the way from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'chein Lamanu Shumei David U'Shlomo Nagur B'Yisur Muksav Machamat Kufo. And certain things already in times of David and Shlomo were applicable. We made Nechemiah, in times of the Navi Nechemiah, Ruach HaChamim Sha'ador Parutz B'Chilo Shabbat. They saw, unfortunately, Chilo Shabbat was rampant, right? People were doing all these, they were cooking, and they were driving, and they were doing all these things on Shabbat. V'osifu V'gazur Shiyu Kol HaKelim Mukteh. So they said, you're not allowed to move any kelim, any utensils, everything is asur. Except for, Rak Shlosha Kelim Shinitzrichu L'Achila Yishuv Heter. So there are three things they needed for food. One of them was a fork. Maybe the other one was a plate or a bowl or something like that. They allowed you to move.
From place to place or in...
At all.
Really?
Yeah. That, at some point, that was the time of Nechemiah. Bekasher chazru li'zer b'dinei Shabbat. Once the people became careful in Shabbat again, hitiru et rov ha'isurim hanogim l'kelim. So they allowed both of them. U'miktzatam notru b'mkoman. A little bit they left. Okay? They quote the Rashi. Some people think the Mukseh is even midoraita. Most of Rishonim hold the Mukseh is only midorabanan. Okay, the Ari Shon hold Mukseh midoraita. Most people hold Mukseh only midorabanan. Okay, so now let's start talking about the rules of Mukseh and start getting into some particular application. I think everybody's a little thirsty for some applications, right? You're thirsty, yeah, Homer? Okay. So he says, Kiklal asru chachamim letatel Shabbat varim she'inam ruim l'shimush b'Shabbat. Okay, as a general rule, the chachamim said you're not allowed to move something on Shabbat that is not fitting for Shabbat, it's not appropriate for Shabbat. Okay? V'adam makze otam midato. And a person, he sets them aside from his mind, he doesn't think about them, he doesn't plan on using them. Kama sugim shel mukze yeshnam. So there are a few categories of mukze. Aleph, mukze machamat kufo. The first one is something
that. Exactly the translation for mukze?
Mukze means set aside. Not to be used. Has no purpose. Okay? So mukze machamat gufo. First category is mukze machamat gufo, and this is going to be one of the stricter categories. Hayin she'inam ru'im l'shum shimush b'Shabbat. Things that don't have any use on Shabbat. Could go avanim like rocks, etzim, branches, you know, trees, things like that. Chol dirt, bali chayim, animals, u'machalim she'olu ru'im l'chila. Food that's not fit for eating. Bezer Hashem, in the next section, we're going to get into the details of all these things. Okay, next page. Bet. Second category of mukzeh. Mukzeh ma'achamat chisaron kis. Things that are forbidden because of financial loss. Hainu, keilim ba'alei erech. Things that are very valuable. Shadam makpid shelo lekachtam shelo lesorach shimusham hamyuchad mechashash yitkalkulu. Certain things, you don't use them for anything. You're not just going to use them for anything. Mekevan she'en lahem shimush b'shabbat harei shadam makzeh otam midato. He sets them aside. He doesn't have any intention to use them at all. Okay? So for example,
things that you don't even use during the week, you don't move them.
Oh, you only use them, let's say, so one example, a very famous example is, let's say, a knife for a surgeon uses, right? It's delicate. If you play around, you try cutting your potatoes with it or something, it's going to be completely ruined, right? It's used during the week for surgery, but it's very careful, it's very delicate, and you're not going to use it on Shabbat stam for anything.
Like a shechting knife?
So I'm not sure if knife shechita, but they do say the knife for brit milah is also one example. That's only that it's very delicate. It's only used for very certain purposes. I'm pretty sure poskim say that a CD also will be mukta machamat chisaron kis because it's fragile. It can get scratched very easily. It can break very easily. So I'm very careful about how I manage it, how I hold it, how I handle it. So all those things are in the category of mukta machamat chisaron kis. And
what about something that's really expensive, like a laptop?
So it could be, yeah. Something that I wouldn't just throw around.
Say you left your phone, obviously turned off for Shabbat in your bed.
Okay, so that may mukta machar chisar. Okay, so we'll get to Bezer Hashem how we can move these things, and the which circumstances we're allowed to, which circumstances we're not allowed to. But in the general category of things we don't move, probably, I mean, it depends. If your phone... I'm not sure.
Something you would use during the week. So.
Right. The question is would you describe your phone as being delicate?
If it's an iPhone, maybe, not an Android.
Androids are tougher. Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Items? It's only items it's applicable to, or it's like an action also? So, for example, like carrying, is that considered mukta or just considered...
No, carrying is its own prohibition. It's own, right, if you're carrying where there's no eruv, that's a separate prohibition called hotza'ah. Right. Right. Mukta is specifically moving items which are not for Shabbat use.
Gotcha.
Right, okay. So that's bet. Gimel, and this is actually one of the ones I'm most interested in, I'm very eager to find out more about it. Basis ledavar ha'asur. I have a basis for something that's forbidden. What is that? Kulomar kasher adam meniach mukzeh al davar she'eino mukzeh. He puts something that is mukzeh on something that's not mukzeh. Kigon shitkaven shiyeh alav b'shabbat. He wanted it to be there for Shabbat. Harei shiksa gam et habasis midato. So therefore, he made the basis also separated, set aside. Ve'af hu naaseh mukzeh. And then the basis becomes mukzeh also. So let's say I had a bowl where I keep my coins, my loose change. Okay? So that bowl, is not mukzeh. A bowl, and a lot of things I can do with a bowl on Shabbat. But since this bowl is set aside specifically to hold something that is mukzeh, right, I intentionally left my coins in there on Shabbat, or let's say a wallet. A wallet itself, I keep permitted things in my wallet. The wallet itself shouldn't be a basis. But since I keep money in the wallet, I keep my credit cards in the wallet, so the wallet itself now becomes a basis, and
but
I can't
only
move the wallet either.
It's only while the money is in it?
Yeah,
so, no, even if you were to somehow remove the money on Shabbat, the wallet itself, as long as when Shabbat started, it was a basis, it retains the status of basis throughout Shabbat.
Isn't it an empty wallet, you can use it?
I think so, I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that, but
That's the way I understood it also, meaning it works the other way also. If it wasn't a basis, and then you put something in it...
On Shabbat, it doesn't become a basis. Correct. Basis, I assume he'll discuss basis, he'll go into those details as well. Basis, I believe, is generally determined by the onset of Shabbat. What is on or not on this item at the onset of Shabbat? Okay? Fine. Now...
How about a room, Rabbi? A room where it's like a movie theater room,
So, I mean, first of all, you're not really going to move.
You can't move it.
What are you going to move? The chair can become a basis, but the room you're not going to move, I believe. Okay, good. Gimel. Dalet. Okay, the fourth category, Kelim Shemlachtam Lisur. And this is probably one of the more common categories which comes up a lot. V'dinam miyuchad shehoil v'noadu la'asiyat melacha asura adam makseh otam midato. Since a person has in mind, he sets them. He's not going to do melacha on Shabbat, so he sets them aside as davar asur, right? He sets them aside as mukzeh. Ulam mineged lefamim mishtamshim b'hem letzorech heter. However, sometimes you do use these things for a permitted purpose. Ulachen asur letatel otam letzorech atzmam. I'm not allowed to move them for themselves. Aval mutar letatel otam letzorech gufam u'mekomam. I'm allowed to move them if I need them for themselves, or if I want to do something permitted with in that space, if I need the space. So the most famous example is a hammer, correct. A hammer is the most famous example that I'm not allowed to move a hammer on Shabbat because it's made for melacha. But since there are other things I could do with it also, so therefore, if I needed this space, let's say it's on my Shabbat table and I want to put a plate there because somebody wants to sit there, right? So I need the space. Or alternatively, if I let's say I don't have a nutcracker, right, and I have some nuts in a shell and I want to open them, I need a hammer. I need something hard to break it open. So then I would be permitted to use the hammer if I don't have a nutcracker available. Okay, so those are the two situations where I can use davar klisha melachto liisur. I use the tzorach gufo. I use the tzorach mekomo. Bezer Hashem will elaborate much more on this in sections 7, 8, and 9. Yes.
Let's say a remote control, right?
Yeah, I assume it's klisha melachto liisur.
Right. So let's say it's on a chair.
Okay.
In a family, in a living room.
Yeah.
And I want to sit on the chair.
Right.
So you'd be allowed to move it for the space.
Right. Correct.
So can I pick it up, take it, and put it on the closet, or do I have to brush it off?
That's a good question. I think once I pick it up, I'm pretty sure I can put it down wherever I want.
Yeah.
Once I'm picking it up, because I'm allowed to move it. Once I pick it up, beheter, I believe I'm allowed to move it wherever, if I'm not mistaken.
So
but I assume when we get to those chapters, he'll elaborate on this more. But yeah, I'm sorry.
No,
Okay, yeah, okay. Now, Imam Muktzeh Davar Ma'us, and this comes up a lot also, Shegorem Latzar, which causes a lot of discomfort, so to speak, Kigmo Graf Shalrei, like Graf Shalrei literally means a bedpan, right? Back then, they didn't have indoor plumbing, right? So people would put bedpans next to the bed, so they wouldn't have to go out in the freezing cold in the middle of the night to use their bathroom. They would put a bedpan next to their bed, and they use that in the middle of the night, and then empty it out in the morning. So that's pretty disgusting, right? It's Muktzeh. Whatever's in that bedpan has no use on Shabbat.
Why is it Muktzeh?
Because there's no purpose. It doesn't have any...
That's the purpose, using it as
a... No, the pan itself is not Muktzeh. The contents of the pan are Muktzeh. But the... And I wouldn't be allowed to move the contents. However, if it's something that's disgusting, so the Chachamim allowed you... Atir Chachamim lefanot otam biyadayim. Like, very often you'll have baby diapers. Baby diapers can be a big issue. Or, this comes up, unfortunately, when I lived in Washington Heights, this would come up a lot. Some poskim hold, let's say you find a cockroach in your apartment on Shabbat, which unfortunately would happen in Washington Heights. I can manage if I have a cockroach in my apartment. My wife can't manage with a cockroach in our apartment. So it's Graf Shalrei for her. So many poskim say that's considered Graf Shalrei. And I was so much on that opinion when I lived in Washington Heights, and therefore you'd be allowed to remove it if necessary from wherever you need to remove it from. Okay. Now, next paragraph. Ha'isur hu l'tatel muktzeh. The prohibition is to move the muktzeh. Kolomar, ha'zizo to biyadayim, to move it with your hand. Ava mutar lingoa b'muktzeh, v'lo la'zizo to, you're allowed to touch something without actually moving it, you're allowed to touch it. V'lachen, mutar lifros b'shabbat mapal, machshev. Let's just say you left your laptop out on your desk. It's bothering you. Ugh, I don't want my laptop there. It's not kavod Shabbat. It's not in the spirit of Shabbat. So you're allowed to cover it. Telephone, ushaar dvarim shem muktzeh. I want to cover my telephone. Whatever it is, it's bothersome that it's not in the spirit of Shabbat for me to have it around. And therefore, I'm allowed to cover it. Okay? Because I'm not moving it. I'm just covering it. That's fine. Utzorech heter mutar l'tatel tam muktzeh me'atzad. And similarly, if I'm doing it for a permitted purpose, so then I'm allowed to move it via something else. I'm allowed to move the muktzeh via something else. Kigon, shutzarech li tobi yado chefetz o ma'achal. Let's say I need to move an item or a food. Im tochen tzidato meziz et ha-muktzeh shelitzido. If I need to move the muktzeh that's on its side, kol zman shelo ragad muktzeh biyadav. As long as I don't touch the muktzeh itself, ein baze isur. There's no prohibition. Okay, as long as I'm not touching the muktzeh itself, there's going to be no prohibition. So, for example, let's say I have a bowl of fruits, and there's something muktzeh in that bowl of fruits. Let's say there's a coin in that bowl of fruits. So, if I want to move the bowl, right? Let's say I can't pour out all the fruits. Whatever, it's going to get disgusting. I can't pour out all the fruit. I want to move the bowl, but there's a coin inside. I'm moving the coin. So, as long as first of all, it's not a basis. I mean, I didn't intend for the coin to be there for Shabbat. And number two, I didn't want the I'm moving it not for purposes of moving the coin, but moving it for purposes of moving the fruit. So then I'd be allowed to move that bowl to the wherever I need to move it. Okay. Similarly, let's say a person has I saw this I think in the art school book once. Let's say somebody has a keychain, right? And he has his car keys on the keychain, and he didn't separate his personal keys from his car keys before Shabbat started. His car keys are muktzeh. His house keys are not muktzeh. So he'd be allowed to carry, but hold on to the house keys and carry his keychain with him, because even though he's moving the car keys also, that's called tiltul min atzad. Since he needs the keychain and he can't take the key off, that would be called tiltul min atzad. Okay? Avakasher yitzorek letatal ta muktzeh kedei leshomro. But if I want to move it, if I want to protect the muktzeh, asur lasot zo b'tiltul min atzad, I'm not allowed to do it. Okay, you're not allowed to move it in any way with your hand. However, you're allowed to use your body. If I'm moving my body to move something from set, right, then it's okay. I use my foot to move it, or I use my shoulder to move it or something. In that case, moving it would be allowed. Let's say I'm not sure if it's muktzeh or not. I found fruit under the tree. V'safek im nishru lifnei Shabbat o b'Shabbat. I don't know if they fell off before Shabbat or during Shabbat. Yesh lahachmir, I should be machmir. If it's a suffix in din, okay, then you could be lenient. Okay, let's start with the categories. Okay, muktzeh ma'achamat gufo. First category. Okay, things that are inherently muktzeh. They inherently have no use on Shabbat. Kol davar sheino ra'uy l'shum shimush b'Shabbat has no use on Shabbat. Muktzeh ma'achamat gufo. Okay, it's guf atzmo. There's no use. Fine. Uvechlal zeh. Look at the second line. Avanim, stones, balei chayim, animals. Matviot kesef, coins, chatzatz, gravel, afar, dirt, etzim, trees, twigs, alim, v'kol min psolet,
leaves,
thank you, and any type of garbage. V'chein gufat min, rachmana litzlan, the body of a person who passed away, is also considered muktzeh ma'achamat gufo. Gam letzorech davar mutar, asur letaltel muktzeh. So even if I want to use it for something that's permitted, I'm not allowed to move it, l'mashal. Even though I'm allowed to like, take a hammer to crack open a nut or something, if I don't have a nutcracker, I'm not allowed to use a stone. Because the stone has no inherent purpose on Shabbat.
But you want to give it a purpose.
So, okay, so, if you want to give it a purpose, so before Shabbat, I have to set aside in my mind that I want to use it for this purpose. Shel hachzagat ha-dalet for holding the door. O bituach ekozim derech keva. It has to be derech keva. I mean, I have to decide that I'm going to regularly use this as a nutcracker. I'm going to regularly use this as a door stopper. Not just I'm going to do it one time. I've decided in my mind I'm going to regularly use it for this. So then I'm allowed to use it for that on Shabbat. So unless I decide.
This specific rock. You can't just say any rock.
Correct. That's I believe.
So that's like the classic joke, like set aside rocks to throw out.
Exactly. It's probably not a joke. I mean, I assume that they're going to throw rocks on Shabbat and they set them aside before Shabbat for that purpose.
So funny.
Yeah. At least they didn't violate Mukseh. Correct. Okay? So, Oli Shtameshvab HaMachat. So the other way, either you can have in mind that you're forever going to use it for this purpose, or use it once for this purpose during the week. That by itself is enough in order to make it set aside for this purpose. Okay? So to dirt or sand is going to be mukzeh. But if I find something disgusting, I can't cover it with dirt or cover it with sand. However, if I set it aside for this purpose, I placed it in a certain place for this purpose, ainu mukseh, it's not mukseh. V'chein chol, this is a very important halakha l'maaseh, v'chein chol shu'unach b'argaz l'tzorach mishak ha'iladim, ainu mukseh. Sandbox, since that sand, even though sand normally has no purpose, since this sand was set aside for purposes of children playing on Shabbat, it's not considered to be mukseh. Divrei ma'achal shu'asurim b'achila, things that are you're not allowed to eat. Umitkabnim letaknam lachar Shabbat. We're going to fix it after Shabbat. Kigon peirot shelo ifrishu mehem truma to maaser. Let's say fruit that they didn't separate truma or maaser. Velechem shelo hufrisham imenu chala, and bread that chala was not separated from are mukzeh.
So sand itself is mukzeh. Going to beach sand is mukzeh.
Correct. Aval.
I like go saying
that. Okay. Aval basar taref. Shemitkavnim lateto tolegoi ino mukseh. But if I'm not kosher meat, I'm going to give it to a non-Jew. That's not considered mukseh.
We're not walking on sand.
That's a good question. Is that tiltum min atzad? I don't know. I mean, it's the normal way you move sand, but I don't know if that's. Yeah, I always move sand with my feet. It's ino mitkaven, but it. So what do they do when they walk on the beach?
Soil.
If you want to move sand, you move it with your hands.
You're saying since it's not the way people intentionally move sand. So therefore, it's not considered to be a way of moving sand. Is that what you're saying? Okay, could be
an intentional way of moving sand.
Right? I'm sorry. Right. That's right. Exactly. That's what Sean's saying. Since it's not an intentional way of moving sand, right? Very good. Then it's, okay.
So can you walk on the beach? No.
Okay. So we had Tzarechiyun. Okay. I don't know if the poskim speak about it for various reasons, but it's Tzarechiyun. They probably speak about, like, let's say if I walk outside in the dirt, right, and I have like, you know, dirt mounds that I'm moving with my feet, right? I presume that's okay, right?
Unless you're in cleats.
Then it's choresh, correct. Yeah. Correct. Okay.
Is there going to have a minyan here?
Okay, so who still needs to pray Arvit?
I would pray. There's some people over there.
Praying Arvit, you prayed already? Which one?
You would stay. I told me you'd stay if you needed.
You prayed already?
Yeah.
But I can, okay, I prayed, I can stay also. Did you pray yet? Can you stay?
I can stay.
Oh, you prayed already?
No, I couldn't stay.
Did you pray yet?
No.
Okay.
Those guys are leaving.
Okay, fine. So you want to ask them if they want to join us? We have eight here. So we have two more guys. We can make a minyan.
Rabbi, so a lot of people, let's say they have a dog that they love playing with. So are they allowed to
good.
Set aside the dog before Shabbat?
Good. So
need the recording?
Okay. So a watch. So I'm not sure if I'd call that klisha melachtoli sur, meaning it's not something that I use for forbidden purposes. Even if it was, I'm moving it letzorech gufo, meaning I need my watch so I can tell my time wherever I'm going. So I don't think it's a prohibition of muksa. I never heard that before. Okay, anyway, so let's continue. Divrei ma'achal, foods, shiruyim la'achila b'shatat chak, ina muksa. So if I can eat it, if necessary, that's not considered muksa. Avalim einam ruyim la'achila lo bishulo afya, something that I can't eat at all without cooking or baking, could go on kemach, like flour, tabuchei adama, shashua, beans, potatoes, raw meat, raw fish, harehem muksim. Now, what about sushi? So I don't know. If it's a sushi grade salmon, not all fish is sushi grade, but if it's sushi grade, I assume it's not mukse. Though animals we eat it, nevertheless hay mukse, because normally I don't give it to animals. Human food I don't give to animals normally. In theory I could, but normally I don't. If it was not kosher food that I plan to give to an animal, he said in the previous paragraph that would be okay. But stam, I wouldn't give it, and therefore it would be considered to be mukta. There's something about the previous paragraph I forgot to say. He says that if I have dough that I have not separated challah from, that's mukta. Now, my impression is that in chutz la'aretz, you're allowed to eat the dough and then leave over a little bit at the end, and then after Shabbat, separate that as challah.
Make a bracha.
Meaning, let's say I bake my challah on Friday, right? Yeah. Friday night I come to the table and I realize I never separated challah from my dough. So I'm allowed to eat the dough, eat the bread, and then leave over a little bit at the end to be my challah, which after Shabbat I will separate as my challah. Yeah. If it's challah in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not allowed to do that. But challah chutz la'aretz, I am allowed to do that. So I'm just wondering if this rule that bread that didn't separate challah is mukseh would apply even to challah chutz la'aretz. I don't think it does. Probably means specifically the type of bread that I'm not allowed to eat any of it until that's like tevel, until I separate the challah. That type of bread I would not be allowed to move unless I separate challah. But I assume challah chutz la'aretz, I am allowed to eat it and then separate the mukseh, separate the challah later. I assume yes, but I'm not sure. I don't know. You thought yes? Separating it. I don't know. Okay, now let's just continue to the next page a little bit. We have a couple more minutes. Bishat adachak. So let's say, this could come up a lot, unfortunately. Kasher ha-makpi hifsik la'avod. So let's say my freezer breaks down on Shabbat. V'abasar v'adak shebetocho alim litzkakel. My frozen fish, my frozen meat, it's all going to get spoiled. Somchim ala sovrim shekivan shem ruim lemaachal kelev inam muktzev utar lahavrim lemakpi afer. Since there are those that say, since it's fit for animal consumption, it's not considered to be muktzev, and therefore I'd be allowed to move them to another freezer. Balei chayim hem muktzev ki in b'hem shimush b'shabbat. Animals are muktzev; they have no use.
You can pet a dog.
Okay, so let's see. V'shat ha'tzorech hitiru le'achoz b'hem ulegoraram kedei latet lem ochel o kedei l'shomram. So let's say. Let's say my animal is, I need to go feed it, the food is somewhere else, and it's not coming. Or I need to save it, I need to protect it from something. Let's say it's cold outside, I need to bring it inside the house, and it's not coming on its own. So then let's say I had a leash, I'd be allowed to pull it in, sort of drag it, in order to protect it or to give it food. And then v'chayot machmad, which I think means like friendly animals, she'rigilim tamid laharim u'l'sha'ashua. Sorry, in the first case, I'm not allowed to pick it up. But if I have friendly animals that I always pick them up and I play with them, eina mukse, which I never heard before. But apparently, he says, as you look at earlier in section 20, chapter 20, section 5, that's where he speaks about all the halachot of animals. Okay, psot ma'achalim, shiruyal ma'achal kalavim o chatulim. If I have leftover food that is animals can eat, that's not mukse. Because even if you don't have one, since there are dogs and cats in the city, it's considered to be useful and it's not mukteh. Similarly, bones, right? Bones, the animals could eat the bones. It's not considered to be mukteh.
Is that the one that's mukteh on Yom Tov?
bones, I believe, are mukseh on, I think, are mukseh on Yom Tov. I think so. But I'm not sure, that may be talking about bones that are not roi la behema. Yeah, that's like eggshells and things like that. I'm not sure, I'm not sure if bones, maybe bones are included, I don't know. Okay, anyway, so let's just finish these two paragraphs very quickly. But he says things that even animals don't eat, like pits and like shells and things like that. So those are going to be mukzeh. Well, I assume we'll discuss those more later on. Okay, fine. I guess that's it for this section. B'zrasha, next time we'll start with mukzeh, machamat, chisaron, kis. Hey, chazak baruch, everybody. Yes, let's get a minyan.